When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another edition of SliceOffice.com. Well, every once in a while, we invite an author on, or maybe even a movie director. Today, my friend Andy Cutler, who's written a book called The Batter's Box. This is fiction, and Andy is coming to Wisconsin to sell his new book. Thanks for coming on the show, Andy.
It's great to be with you, Sly.
Now, I should say, you're a Wisconsin native, and more importantly, you are a proud graduate of Madison Memorial High School, a school that I graduated from. So we'll just lay that predicate down right now.
No favoritism here.
No favoritism. Okay. You were a Spartan twice because you went to Michigan State, too. All right. Let's talk about The Batter's Box. I'm about a third of the way through it, and I had no idea that you had such a sense of imagination. When you write fiction and you're describing how people look or what they're wearing, how does all this stuff pop into your head, Andy?
Imagination is a good word for it. It was when I started writing fiction, I did not realize the toughest challenge is creating characters, essentially out of whole cloth. You have to create people. And you just cannot simply do that in a couple of sentences. You have to think about how they talk, what they wear, what their mannerisms are, how they were raised. All those things factor into their character, and you really have to think about the details and really capture that in your imagination and then put those words on paper. I had no idea how difficult it was. At the same time, I loved it. I mean, it was really... some of these characters I've become quite close to. They feel like family, even though they're completely imaginary.
All right, but you also have to paint a picture of their surroundings, where they're at, what they're doing, their gestures. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, so for some of that, I mean, a lot of that can be accomplished through research. For example, the middle section of the book takes place in World War II Belgium. And at a particular historical site, a very large battlefield there, and I actually went there and walked that ground and looked around. So when you read about them describing ridges or the topography or even the environment, it's because I actually stood there and sort of absorbed it all.
Read a few books about the Battle of the Bulge?
Correct.
Okay, so first of all, I shouldn't bury the lead here. What's your itinerary for book signings and coming to Wisconsin?
Well, the book comes out on March 12th, and I wanted to come back to my home state and kick everything off. So on Thursday, March 14th, I'm in Milwaukee at Boswell Book Company in downtown Milwaukee. And then on Friday evening, I'll be at Mr. DeMee Bookstore in Madison, down on Monroe Street. I'll be there at 7 p.m. with Doug Moe, who I think many people in Madison are familiar with. He'll be discussing the book with me.
And he just wrote a book about Tommy Thompson. So there you go. All right, Batter's Box. Tell us about Will Jameson without giving away. Obviously, we don't want to give away. We don't want to give away the ending of the book or anything. But tell me about this baseball player who is a superstar, but decided when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor that he was going to walk away from a very promising career.
Yeah. So one thing I like to do in these books is tell stories that I don't think a lot of people are familiar with. And, you know, I'm a baseball fan, and I thought I was somewhat familiar with baseball history. But one period that really fascinated me was baseball during World War II. And I knew that we had played, that the game had never stopped. I knew that at some point the game was slightly diminished because some of the players were leaving. But as I dug into this, I found out some really interesting things. And one of those items is that late in the war, many of the players did leave. They signed up for the armed forces, but the vast majority of them did not serve in combat. They were put in duties like selling war bonds or playing in exhibition games. These were American icons back then. The notion of one of them being killed or captured was just unfathomable. However, early in the war, there were a small handful who not only volunteered for military service very early on, but they actually insisted on combat duty. some of the more famous ones there in that group is Ted Williams,
right?
Who is probably the preeminent baseball star at that point. Hank Greenberg is another. Bob Feller, who was my dad's childhood hero in Cleveland. And then, so Will Jamison is part of that group. I mean, he's fictional, but he is part of that group. That after Pearl Harbor, he enlists in the United States Army, and he insists on serving in combat for all the right reasons.
And by the way, we should preface this with your first stop in Wisconsin is going to be in Milwaukee. Milwaukee had a mayor resign and went and served in World War II and was killed in action.
Is that right? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. So these are pretty remarkable men that, and of course, were plenty of women that volunteered for what they could do at the time. All right, so Will Jamison, the fictional character, is from Lancaster, Wisconsin. How the hell did you pick Lancaster, Wisconsin?
Well, it actually, that's right around my wife's hometown. My wife is from a little town in southwestern Wisconsin called Spitzer, which is right outside Fenimore and Lancaster. And so I thought I'd have some fun and use Lancaster, but you know that's where he's from originally. And you know he was just this kid from rural Wisconsin and discovered baseball sort of as a teenager, and then he was plucked into the minor leagues and found himself in the major league. So it's a you know that's just sort of his background.
All right, tell us about Kay.
Yeah, Kay. So Kay, you know. In every story about soldiers, it seems that there's a girl, right? You know, Burt Lancaster wasn't rolling around on that beach by himself. sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In this case, you know, Kay Barlow is, we'll call, you know, she's more than his romantic interest. So she's an important character. So one of the key points of this story, and we'll get to this, is that Will Jamison comes back from the war with some psychological scars, which, of course, has been true of warfare since the beginning of time. But in World War II, we don't really associate that with our World War II veterans so much. Kay Barlow is his love interest. But for me, she represents, as you may know, I had a brother who suffered from mental illness. And, you know, he ended up taking his own life. And one thing, I wrote about that afterwards, and one thing that I discovered is, based on the number of people that approached me about the article I wrote, was how many of us know someone, a loved one, a family member, a friend, who is suffering from some sort of psychological issue.
Oh, that and mental illness runs deep in my family. It's
is that right?
Terrible.
I'm not surprised. It's incredibly commonplace, and yet, of course, we still talk about it so little. But for those who have been in that position, have tried to reach out to a loved one to help them, where the person won't reach back, they're just, the issues are so complex, that is the position that Kay Barlow finds herself in. And I think a lot of people who read this book, I mean, it's a great story between Will and Kay on a romantic level, but also I think a lot of people are going to recognize the issues that she has to deal with. And in her relationship with a loved one who is suffering from this condition.
By the
way,
that's
what she represents.
My favorite line is when she described how bad her of course, you know, when they start the relationship, she's married to another man, talking about how bad her husband is in bed, even, especially after having a belly full of gin. I like that very much. again, that's Andy's imagination. So you make this real. These aren't perfect people.
No. And that, you know, I did that in my first book. My first book as well. I mean, because I want my characters to be relatable, and we all have flaws. There are no, you know, supermen.
Well, you speak for yourself. You speak for yourself, Andy. Okay.
A present company excluded, of course. No favoritism here. You know, these characters have flaws. They're not perfect people by any means, as none of us are. And I think that's why they're going to be relatable. But they all have depth, and they all have complexity, and they all have emotions that they're trying to wrestle with. And it really, I think, people will see a lot of this in their own lives, I think.
All right, we'll talk more with Andy Cutler next. He is the author of a book that's getting rave reviews called The Batter's Box, and it actually is a story that's quite applicable to today. You're listening to Sly's Office.com.
Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Welcome back to SlysOffice.com. Joining us again, a former Wisconsinite, Andy Cutler. Andy is a friend of mine. I've known him for a very long time. So when he told me about this book and that he was coming to Wisconsin, I thought, well, let's do a podcast on this. The premise of this book is about somebody coming back from war, the war changing them forever, and how not only it changed his life, but the people around him. Did you partly write this because we see so much of this today with veterans coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq?
No question. In fact, as part of my research in understanding post-traumatic stress, I spoke to a number of veterans, ranging from an old family friend. He's 94 years old. He served in World War II. But I also have a good friend and a former work colleague, who was a Marine officer in Iraq who suffers from post-traumatic stress, and talked to a number of others as well. And sadly, you know, of course, it's detected much better than it was amongst the older generations. It's not that it's increasing. I think it's just a matter of detection now and a willingness to come forward. But it is very prevalent among returning combat veterans. But I'm focusing, of course, on the World War II generation, and part of the reason is that that generation was really conditioned not to talk about these kind of issues. I worked on veterans issues for Senator Feingold and Senator Bryan for many years, and I always had this impression that these veterans didn't talk about their service, especially the older veterans, because they were so humble and so modest about it. And there's definitely some truth to that, and I think that's a large part of it. But many of those veterans also don't talk about it because they can't. They physically cannot bring themselves to describe what they went through, and it's very sad. And so many of them have been holding onto this for their lifetime, especially with the World War II veterans. I mean, a lot of them suffered from alcoholism, divorce, suicide. Because they never could talk about these issues. And I wanted to sort of shine a spotlight on that and bring more attention to that. But no question, it's still affecting our soldiers today. And I hope we're devoting more resources and policy changes to getting them the attention and treatment that they deserve.
So as this book comes to a crescendo, this is all about all the different directions that he could take, right? So when yes. after he came back, how it changed him as a baseball player, because he wasn't the player that he was after he left. He wasn't the man that he was. He wasn't the same lover that he was. He wasn't. War completely changed him, and obviously then he had alcohol and mental health issues, and then there's all sorts of different paths of which way it could go. And so we're not going to spoil the ending, but how did you decide to which direction to go?
Well, that's the toughest. That was the toughest trick in this book, was the ending. I wanted to write.
This is like David Chase with The Sopranos, right?
a little bit. I wanted to look. This is a novel. This is a fiction. People are reading to be entertained, to learn a little. I did not want to write something that was going to really depress people and put them into a drunken stupor for a month. But I wanted it to be realistic, so I found an ending that is hopeful, but is very true to what many of these veterans went through, and I think that's why it's striking a chord with a number of retired military people that have read the book. I think that ending and sort of the balance I found actually works, it was a tough, because you're right, it could have gone. It can go in many different directions depending on their perspective and the people around them and what, whether they even choose to get help or not. But I think the way I played it here works.
You know, my father served stateside in the military during World War II, and he hated the military. He hated anyone telling him what to do. Does that sound familiar? And he had a medical issue with migraine, so he was discharged. I also think he was discharged for telling one too many people off. But that's an aside. But I do believe many of the people he served with in Fort Riley, Kansas, ended up in the Battle of the Bulge. And I believe many of them were killed. He didn't talk about it. But I often wonder myself how different my father might have been had he served during, if he had lived, if he had served and come back after being through something like that.
Yes. Well, we had 16 million men serve in World War II, 16 million. And if even a small fraction of them came home with psychological issues, it's still a huge, huge number. And of course, let me preface that 16 million number. Only a fraction of those actually served in combat. I mean, as is true in any army of large scale, you have people in support roles, communications, transportation, supply, intelligence, medicine. But even if, you know, I don't know what the exact figure is, but even if a quarter of those served in combat and, you know, a quarter of those were affected psychologically, it's still an incredibly large number. And that's just, you know, and the Battle of the Bulge, I mean, that's the largest battle in the history of the United States Army. You know, it involved more than 1 million men were involved in that battle alone. Just the intensity of the fighting and the chaos and the bloodshed. Honestly, I don't understand how somebody comes out of that not psychologically affected. I really don't understand with those sights and sounds.
How did you get all these people that reviewed the book, that very prominent in the military, to read it?
You know what? I asked.
Were you persistent, truly, Andy?
I was a little persistent, but you know what? I was really warmed by how welcoming they were of the manuscript and their willingness to read it. These are as you can tell from some of the advanced praise, these are retired 2- and 3-star Army and Marine Corps generals. Some of them are still very prominent in public life. They're very busy people, but they all expressed a willingness to read the manuscript, and some got to me in 2 or 3 days. And we're just, and with the message of what can we do to help? How can we get this message out? What do you need from us? And I was just really encouraged by that. And then the National World War II Museum came in and endorsed the book. And that was something I'm very proud of. So, but I asked, and so many of them said yes. It was very gracious of them to do that.
So are you going to Pentagon City and going to a bookstore and doing some book signings and areas where there's a lot of military people?
I do have one on the books here near where I live in Arlington. At the end of the month, I'm going to do my local launch here. And I'm going to got a number of other public events that my publisher and I are working on scheduling. And I'm trying to figure out ways to, I really want to reach. I think the book will appeal to a wide audience, not just people who are interested in military mm-hmm. fiction and sports fiction, but I think it will have a wide appeal, but I want to make sure I do what I can to communicate to those retired military, to the veterans, to active duty military. I think they will really connect with the book, and so we're working on some things to reach that audience.
You have a day job. How did you have time to do this?
So I actually have a night job too, which is my daughter's softball team. But it's all about time management. I'm pretty disciplined. I have a little basement set up with my computer and my books, and I'm down there for a few hours, 5 or 6 nights a week. It's why this didn't happen overnight. I mean, this book probably took me a good couple years to complete. I have a very supporting family. I'm just very efficient with my time. And then most importantly, I love what I write, and that makes it go so much easier and so much faster. And it's not a problem focusing in for 2 or 3 hours a night when I'm writing what I love.
Well, you write very well. It's really a fascinating book. I'm going to be gone while you're actually in Wisconsin. I'll be in Canada, so the book is coming with me to Canada, and I'll finish
Excellent.
It up. All right, let's just reiterate where you're going to be.
So Thursday, March 14th, I will be at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, And Friday, March 15th, I will be in Madison at Mystery to Me Bookstore down on Monroe Street in conversation with Doug Moe.
All right. Again, it's the Batter's Box. Andy Cutler, native Madisonian. You hang on the line for just a second. Thanks for coming to Sly's Office.com.
Sly's Office.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.